Thank you very much. Again, I just want to announce officially that the share today is sponsored, as you just heard, by Chuck and Leslie Lowenstein in memory of Barbara Lowenstein, Chuck's mother, and Bracha Alta Bas Leib Halevi on the 10th Yahrzeit. And Baruch Hashem, it's always wonderful to hear about a wonderful daughter-in-law, mother-in-law relationship. And also, I was told, and it's quite proper, I'm sorry, did you want to?
We also sponsored in honor of Rabbi
Cooperman. Right. And it's also sponsored in memory of one of the great Mechanchim and Marbitzei Torah of our generation, Rav Yehuda Cooperman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the founder, of course, of Michlala, but also the one who actually opened up the Meshech Chachma to generations of B'nai Torah. Meshech Chachma is a very, very difficult sefer. Rav Cooperman went through every single sentence of the Meshech Chachma with annotations and explanations, and I know personally it opened up the sefer for me and really, really thousands and thousands of others. So he's Zichro Baruch, Baruch Hashem, he leaves a very, very fine mishpacha of B'nai and B'nos Torah. And again, our learning should all be Le'ilui, Nishmas, Barbara Lowenstein, and Harav Cooperman. Okay, I don't know what's going around Yerushalayim, the Yerushalayim virus, or I don't know what it is, but it's every time I think I've beaten it, it comes back. So it's kind of like the Yetzer Hara. You know, the Baal HaTanya says, when you go to sleep in the fight against the Yetzer Hara, the Yetzer Hara comes back. So I notice when I go to sleep, it comes back. It's better when I stay awake, actually. But okay. So Mirza Hashem, also B'Sof Sharchol Yisrael, we should all have a Refuah Shleima. So we are looking, we're still in Perek Beis of Mishlei. And again, I do want to apologize in the sense that you'll recall, as I've said many times already, that the first nine parakim are relatively bereft of pithy epigrams, and they tend to be much more general essays on Avodas Hashem and priority in life. When we get past the first chalik, we'll then get into the proverbs per se, the very short mishalim. There are going to be a few in the first section as well, but not that many. And in particular, though, since the emphasis of this shiur, not exclusively, but there's an emphasis on the commentary of the Vilna Gaon, and the Vilna Gaon's great strength in Mishlei is his very careful distinction in synonyms. He actually took the position there is no such thing as synonyms. Even words that in English may be translated the same, in fact, are different. So let me just show you one yet outstanding example, one of many, literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, in Perek Beis. If you look at Pasuk Ches, chapter 2, verse 8. So again, what is being talked about here generally is the idea of Torah as a protection for a person. Now, we don't mean in the physical sense, although that's also true, that if I learn Torah, God will protect me from calamities. That is true, but as we know, unfortunately, there are many exceptions to that rule. But here we are referring to a different type of protection. That when one absorbs wisdom, one gains a certain protection from the temptations of the world that can drag you down and separate you from God. We're talking about the spiritual purifying power of the Torah. And in Pasuk Ches, it says, now remember, this is a continuation of the idea that when does Torah do its job? It says, Im tevakshena kakesef. When you seek it with the same yearning and enthusiasm that a person looks for money, v'chatmat monim tach besena. And you search it like you're looking for buried treasure. So we're not stam talking about, you know, a person learns or does mitzvos casually. But if a person has enthusiasm and passion, then Hashem will reciprocate by giving them spiritual protection. And Pasuk Ches gives an example of that spiritual protection. And it says, Linsor Orchos Mishpat. Literally, this means Linsor is to guard, to enable you to guard the pathways of judgment V'derech chasidav yishmor. Now the subject of yishmor is a little ambiguous. Yishmor means he will guard, he will watch. Who is the he? Is the he Hashem? Or is the he in the sentence the Torah personified? The Torah will guard you, guard the way of the pious. Or does it mean the one who learns Torah will know how to be on guard? It's a little ambiguous who the subject is. But the Vilna Gaon points out a number of things here. What is the difference between the verb linsor, which is to guard, right? We know nitsor lishoncha meira, guard your tongue from speaking evil. So what is the difference between linsor and yishmor? Yishmor also means to watch, to guard. Number two, what is the difference between orchos, which is pathways, and derech? Now, number one, the problem is, number one, orchos is plural, derech is singular. And number two, one is orach and one is derech. So what's the difference in the words? And finally, what is the reference to chasidav in the second half of the verse that you don't have in the first half? Again, a very little verse, very little pasuk, and you see already all sorts of distinctions. So let's start off with the difference between orach and derech. And this is a klal that you should pay careful attention to every single time you see those words. It is not only in this pasuk. This is a dictionary definition. Derech is the main highway upon which there are many travelers. The highway, or King George, or Rehov Yafo, at least before the light rail. But it was the main highway, so to speak. Orach are the side streets in which a few people go, but a lot of people don't go, etc. Now, Mishpat, the Vilna Gaon says, which we translate as justice or judgment, is actually a reference to Limud HaTorah, which teaches us God's judgments in the world. Not judgments in the sense of punishment, but how God adjudicates different cases, right? Whether it's the law of guardians, the law of Shomrim, or the law of damages, or any type of obligation, the laws of Shabbos. So, the first part of the verse is talking about those who occupy themselves in Limud HaTorah. Now that is called an orach, not a derech, the Vilna Gaon says. Because only a few people are really committed to totally learning Torah. Many people, even if they're religious, are not always able to learn Torah with great intensity. So what we call the derech, we actually use the phrase derech haTorah. But what we call the derech haTorah, the Vilna Gaon says, is actually the orach haTorah. Because it is a derech that is so difficult. It takes so much mesiras nefesh, so much devotion, and of course the Vilna Gaon knows of what he speaks. Here is a man who is saying these words, who typically studied Torah 22 hours a day for much of his life, never sleeping more than a half an hour at a time, four times a night. In fact, there's a whole story that the Vilna Gaon very rarely left town, but once he had to go to a family simcha in a nearby town. And the story goes that he had a room in an inn or something, and people used to pay to watch him sleep. In fact, there was a ladder. This is recorded. He was on the fifth story or something, and people would climb the ladder for 5 minutes at a time, and for a few zloty or whatever the currency was, they had 5 minutes to watch the Vilna Gaon sleep. Of course, that only gives you six people. It's not a big revenue maker. Anyway, it is recorded that one time he slept 32 minutes. He slept two more minutes than usual. And the person who saw that, saw the Vilna Gaon get up, and he saw the Vilna Gaon, didn't notice people were watching him. He was pacing back and forth, and he was in great agitation. He says, I've lost 2 minutes. How will I make up 2 minutes? He says, this is a sleepy town, he said in Yiddish. This is a schleffene town, or for schleffene town. And he says he's going to try not to come here again because it took away, 2 minutes of his Torah learning. Anyway, 22 years later, he had to come back to that town again. And he slept only 28 minutes. And it is recorded There was a great, great simcha in the town because they returned to the Vilna Gaon, his 2 minutes, as it were. This was the Vilna Gaon. Now, lest you think he was neglectful of other things, let me just tell you something. Again, it's not directly relevant here, but it's an amazing maisa. There was a fellow after the war visited a shul in Poland, not even in Vilna. And, you know, most shuls in Poland were destroyed, obviously, but occasionally in some outlying area there might be a base Knesset that wasn't destroyed. Also in Krakow, by the way, you may know that virtually all of the shuls in Krakow escaped destruction. There was a very interesting reason. Krakow was the capital of Nazi-occupied Poland. And Krakow is a beautiful city. It's a medieval city and the like. And Hans Frank, who was the Nazi governor of Poland, didn't really care about killing millions of Jews. That didn't bother him. But he didn't want to ruin the beautiful architecture of Krakow. So he gave orders to the Nazis that no buildings in Krakow should be touched, just kill the people. Unlike Warsaw, which, as you know, 90%, both because of the Germans and because of the Allies, 90% of Warsaw was totally physically destroyed, Krakow is intact. Every shul of Krakow is still up there. But be it as it may, the story goes that a man davened mincha in some shul. Maybe there wasn't even a minyan, but, you know, he davened mincha in a shul. And he commented to his wife afterwards, he said, I don't know what's going on. I never had such a davening in my life. I was uplifted. I was inspired. I felt holiness. I felt close to Hashem. I really don't know what is so significant here. Anyway, he did some research, and it turned out 150 years before, the Vilna Gaon had once davened mincha in that shul, and that happened to be the place where he stood. The person didn't even know that. See, it's one thing if a person would say, I was inspired, I was in the shul of the Vilna Gaon, like people go to Krakow, the Ramah shul. And people say, I'm inspired, I'm in the shul of the Ramah. He didn't even know. But the Kedusha was so powerful that over 100 years later, almost 200 years later, in that place, there was this Kirvas Elokim. So the Vilna Gaon says, the Derech HaTorah, I'm using Derech, not in the way the Gra uses it, the Derech HaTorah is really an orach. Few people can really put in the work and the toil and the effort that it takes, but there's immense sweetness at the end. That is why it is called Orchos Mishpat. It is the orach of the few. Now, every Jew has to learn Torah, but to become mamish, connected to Torah to that degree, is an orach. Now, as opposed to chasidav, in the second half of the pasuk, chasidav, pious ones, refers to Jews who are very careful in doing mitzvos. They seek mitzvos, and they're pious, and they deserve reward because they seek mitzvos. But since mitzvos are the common obligation of every Jew, we call that a derech. The limud haTorah with intensity is called the orach. Shmiras haMitzvos of the Chassidim, these are non-Beshdian Chassidim, although we would include Beshdian Chassidim as well. That is called Derech. Alright, so that's Orach versus Derech. Why plural versus singular? Because the Gra says, in Limud HaTorah, there are infinite levels of understanding. Some learn Pshat, and some learn remez, allusion, and some drush, and some sod, and infinite meanings, ayin panim la Torah. So the orach of Torah is manifold, different ways of learning, different drachim, even in recent centuries, that's the 20th century. We have different drachim without getting into the specifics. In the yeshiva world, there's Rav Chaim's derech, and there's the Telzer derech, and Rav Baruch Ber. These are all different drachim of learning. That's why it's called, I'm using drachim, but that's why it's called orchos. But when it comes to mitzvos, the basic observance everyone does is the same. Now, of course, there are different levels of kavanah, but mitzvos are a common obligation. So that is the difference between orchos mishpat and derech chasidav, right? And this explains why orchos is plural and derech is singular. And it explains the difference between orach and derech. Orach is the way of the few, and derech is the way of the many. Remember this klal. Finally, what is the difference in verb between linsor and yishmor? Both mean to guard and to protect. But the Vilna Gaon proves from various other texts that netzira, netzor, is something that's shemira ma'ula. It is extra careful guardian. It's guarding under lock and key. Shemira is more casual. Netzira is intense protection. Maximum security. Okay, so in a minimum security prison, we could call it shemira. If you're maximum security, netzira. Now the Vilna Gaon says the following idea. He says, the Yetzer Hara is much more stronger against those who are learning Torah. In other words, they have to work harder to overcome the Yetzer Hara because it is choice fruit. If somebody is lazy, if somebody is not doing much anyway, the Yetzer Hara is not going to encourage them to sin because the Yetzer Hara figures, I got them already. But the Talmid Chacham, that's a real target. That's a win. That's a catch. And the Yetzer Hara will try to afflict the Talmud Chacham in many, many different ways. One way might be gaiva and arrogance. Right? The Talmud Chacham might be especially prone to arrogance because he knows more and may know more than a lot of other people. The Talmud Chacham might conceivably be prone to laziness, lefi his madrega, because he might say, you know, most people learn, you know, whatever it is, half an hour a day, so I'll do 45 minutes a day, you know, I'm 50% better. You know, basically, it's like a marathon race, not that I know, but marathoners say, marathoners say that you're really supposed to compete against yourself. And that's sometimes hard because we're so used to measuring ourselves against others. Now, often that's negative in the sense that I feel like a failure because I'm not as good as somebody else, and that's not good. But it can sometimes lead to complacency in which, you know, I can take it easy because even if I just go at 50%, I'm a lot better than everybody else. So the Vilna Gaon says, a Talmud Chacham has special Yetzer Haras in which he must be extra vigilant, Nitzira. He cannot assume that because he's learning Torah, he is automatically protected. Now again, if one learns Torah with devotion, Hashem will give you the capacity to protect yourself in that way. But it's not an automatic thing. Havdol, was it Thomas Paine, fellow of the American Revolution, who said, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. Now the truth of the matter is, Chazal say, Ein ben choren, Elamisha Osek Batorah. A person is truly free only if they learn and they keep Torah. That gives you freedom. But I would apply Thomas Paine's reference there. That freedom requires eternal vigilance, which is called Nitzira. You can't take things for granted. Now, not only can you not take things for granted on the higher levels, you know, being arrogant and complacent, but the truth of the matter is, and this is very strange, you can't even take things for granted on lower level sins that you would think a Talmud Chacham is not capable of doing. You know, Chazal say, Al tamin biatzmecha ad yom mosecha. Do not fully trust yourself till the day of death. You never know. You just never know. And I thought that this is brought out in a very interesting way. If you consider the Kriyas HaTorah on Yom Kippur, right? Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the year. So in Shachris, the Kriyas HaTorah of Yom Kippur is Parshas Acharimos, happens to be our mitzvah parsha before Pesach. But in Parshas Acharimos, right, it talks about the Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKdashim. Perfectly applicable. It absolutely is the right thing to read. So what do we read Mincha on Yom Kippur? We read about forbidden sexual relationships, don't commit incest, homosexuality, bestiality. Now in truth, it's a continuation of Acharimos. It's just the Kriya right after that. But one would wonder, you know, this is almost kind of an insult here. You know, here I am on Yom Kippur, and we've reached levels of purity and sanctification, closeness to Hashem. We've separated ourselves from the physical world. So we have to hear a sermon, do not lie with an animal. Is that like what I'm going to do? What is the point here? And really, there's a very strong mussar. The strong mussar says, don't think, just because you become righteous, that you're above all of those things that can tempt a person. We can fall down all the time. And therefore, we have to be careful. We need that nitzira. And in many, many ways, the greater you are, that's why nitzira, the more prone you are to nefila, because the Yetzer Hara targets his efforts against you precisely because you're so good. They tell the story about a man who was a very big tzaddik and a very big masmid, and he had a business, he had a store. And he loved to learn between customers. And he didn't even like when customers came in, he was kind of annoyed a little bit. Because, you know, they're kind of bothering him. So his business was masliach, very good. So when he died, his son took over the business. Now the son was a firm person, but the son figured, you know, my father didn't care about this business. And it did so well. So I'm really going to invest, you know, time and effort and money to make the business successful. And then it'll really take off. So what happened was he invested money, he invested time, he expanded the hours, etc. And he lost business. He went bankrupt a year later. And he didn't understand. I mean, b'derech hateva, I mean, normally his shtadlus effects positive things. My father didn't care about the business and it did so well. And I really care about it and it falls. What's going on? So a Rav told him, your father was totally committed to learning Torah. So the Yetzer Hara was determined to take him away. The Yetzer was determined, pull him away. So he sent him business and customers. And the Yetzer Hara was only moderately successful, because even with the customers he still learned. But you weren't learning anyway. So the Yetzer Hara doesn't have to send you any customers. He says, you're already out of that. Right, you know, so that's the idea, that the Yetzer Hara targets Talmidei Chachamim and the like. So that's a very, very rich example how in a small pasuk, Orchos, Derech, Mishpat, Chasidav, Netzira, Shmira, how close every single verse is looked at. Okay, but not to go further, if you look now to pasuk Yud Beis, again, we have to be selective, unfortunately. Again, this is speaking about how Torah will protect you. So you'll notice, Pasuk Yud Beis says, Lahatzilcha, to save you from, we'll see. And then you'll notice, Pasuk Tesayin, verse 16, it also says, Lahatzilcha. In other words, there are two thematic units here. Lahatzilcha from A, which is Pasuk Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, Tesvav. And then Lahatzilcha from B, which is Tesayin, Yud Zayin, Yud Ches, Yud Tes. Oh, thank you. So you understand the structure here. In other words, there's Lahatzilcha from this, Lahatzilcha from that, and then the two will join in some common verses. So what is the Lahatzilcha? What are you being saved for? So here the Gra has a typology of character flaws, as he kind of takes all the bad that people do, and he tries to link them into a few categories. And he says, the two dominant Yetzer Haras in a person, he calls, is the Koach HaTavani and the Koach HaKasani. Tavani comes from the word ta'ava, which is lust or desire for the physical, sensual pleasures. And then kasani is anger. But again, anger itself could refer to a desire to manipulate people, to control people, because anger generally comes through a frustration of not having somebody do what I want, etc. So he says, we divide this into tavani, which is physical and sensual pleasure, and kasani, which is anger, which we can generalize into either type of violence or manipulation or control over people. Now, he wants to say, you'll see how he gets this, that the first lahat silcha is referring to the averos that come from the koach of kasani, and the second lahat silcha are the averos that come from the koach of the tavani. Now, he goes further. Some of this gets a bit complicated. And he says that in every ra, there is an aspect of tov. So he says, kasani is the bad of the bad. Tavani is the good of the bad. Because after all, a person needs to eat. A person needs to have money. So tavani has a legitimate function in the world. So it is called the good of the bad. But he then says, the good of the bad is worse than the bad of the bad. And the reason is so, because the bad of the bad can be so clearly identified as bad that once you're, you know, it may be difficult to control myself, but I know I can't go there. With Tavani, the Vilna Gaon says, the problem is, the very fact that it does have a legitimate role to play means the possibilities of getting addicted in a negative way are much stronger, because just like they say, I mean, people actually say this, people say that food addictions, which is now a whole area of concern, are the hardest addictions to break, quite literally, because you cannot go, no pun intended, you cannot go cold turkey not even hot turkey, on a food addiction. And any addiction, by definition, if you have to indulge in it to some degree, makes it much more difficult. Like, any addiction is hard to break, but if a person goes cold turkey, so they know they're not going to smoke, so at some point that's going to become easier. If the alcoholic swears off alcohol, at some point, it'll always be a struggle, but it'll become easier. But something you have to engage in every single day, multiple times, it's very difficult. So the Vilna Gaon says that the Tavani is called the Tov Shebara, but the Tov Shebara is worse than the Ra Shebara, because the Ra Shebara is a wolf in wolf's clothing. The Tov Shebara is a wolf in sheep's clothing, and therefore it entices you and it tricks you in much more of a way. Now, he further makes a division, again, he keeps on dividing this more and more and more, that in the koach of tavani, lust for the physical, for pleasure, pleasure seeking, there is two types. There is what we call tava, and there is what we call chemda. Now, both of them are words that refer to pleasure, but he says, Tavani refers to literal pleasure of the body. This would refer to eating, sexual intercourse. That is tava. Chemda refers to what we might call psychological pleasures that do not directly give you pleasure to your body. An example would be an accumulation of wealth, living in a giant house, buying 10 cars, acquisition. This is called chemda because although it is an expression of hedonism and pleasure seeking, it is not a pleasure seeking that directly gives a benefit to the body. Now, he points out the following fascinating thought about the Aseres Hadibros. If you look at the 10th commandment in the Aseres Hadibros, that says, do not covet your neighbor's possessions. So it says, lo sachmod. Now, like, do not have a desire for his house, for his wife, for his property, for his animals. It does not say, lo tisave. And the reason is the following. If it would have said, lo tisave, then perhaps the Torah is prohibiting actually taking it and getting hana from it. Meaning, if it would say, lo tisaveh eishes reyecha, that could have meant, don't commit adultery, which in a way would have made it superfluous, but tisaveh is the actual hana. But by using the word chimut, which refers to situations where you didn't get the physical pleasure, the Torah is teaching me that it is even your thought to covet or be jealous of another person that's forbidden. That is why it says lo sachmot, right? Lo sachmot, because that is chamida belev. Now, so based on this typology, we have the following. We have kasani and tavani. Kasani is called the ra shebara. Tavani is called the tov shebara. Tavani, the hedonism is divided into tava, which is actual physical pleasure, and chemda, which is desire for acquisition and the like. Now, he also makes a point that kasani can also be divided into two. That's less significant in the analysis of the perek. He says, sometimes kas results in what is called ra. Ra is just evil. You hurt people. And then there's another type of ra, which is called mirma, which is you deceive people. That's a different type of hurt. Once again, the concept is, ra is, you know, you see what you get. You know, I hurt you and I'm open about it. What do they say? They used to say in Washington, I'm from Washington, a very political town, that the definition of a friend is someone who stabs you in the front. You know, that is a good friend. So that's ra. Ra is the one who stabs you in the front. Mirma is echad bepeh, the echad belev, the one who speaks words of kindness and support, but actually stabs you in the back. And therefore, once again, that is much worse. That is much more egregious, because in addition to the harm that you suffer, there is also betrayal. Betrayal is very, very hurtful. If you remember, in Tehillim, there's a very, very moving and powerful passage where David HaMelech, he doesn't mention the name, but he's talking about Achisophel, who turned against him with Avshalom, that the person who I loved and the person that I trusted turned against me and betrayed me. We used to learn together. We would go to the house of God with feeling together. And that was the great hurt. You see that David is not simply describing his anguish over people leaving him and going to Avshalom, but specifically the notion that people that he loved and cared about turned against him. So this is Ra and Mirma. Okay, so everyone have the chart over here. Maybe we should have a PowerPoint or something. That is, we have Kasani v'Tavani. Tavani is called the Tov Shebara, which is worse than the Ra Shebara. And then Tava is divided into Tava and Chemda. And Kas is divided into Ra and Mirma. So now, based on that, the Vilna Gaon ingeniously carries it through all of the verses. That's why every verse seems to repeat itself twice in the two halves, but one is referring the Kasani verses, as one is Ra and one is Mirma. In the Tavani verses, one is Taiva and one is Chemda. That's why you'll see it. For example, look at Pasuk Yud Beis. Pasuk Yud Beis is the first Lahatilcha, that God will save you from Derech Ra, from a bad Derech, may ish midaber tapuchos, from the man, from the person who speaks opposite of what he's really planning. So very beautiful. Derech Ra, this is Kasani here. Derech Ra is the people who do bad things to me. Hashem will protect me. And then I need to be protected from those who deceive me. And the reason why it says derech, again, consistent with the Vilna Gaon's explanation, that derech is the highway. Unfortunately, the derech hara is quite a big derech. There are many, many people on that road that are trying to do bad things and hurt people. So the derech of a tzaddik might be an orach, but the derech of a rasha is a derech. It's a pretty big highway. What do they say? They say Gehenim is very big. So, now then it says, Ha'ozvim Orchos Yoshar Loleches Bedarche Choshech. You see, exactly. Orech, once again, is the narrow path of the few. So those who walk with uprightness are in an Orech, not a Derech. And the Rishayim leave the pathway of Yoshar to walk on the pathways of darkness. Now here, the Vilna Gaon explains, although in the preceding pasuk, derech was singular, and in the next pasuk it is plural, that's because there is both a unitary and a multiplicity aspect here. Derech is the decision to live a life of ra. That's one derech. However, there are many types of ra, right? There's cheating people, there's hurting people, there's abusing people, there's insulting people, there's murdering people. So, in the derech hara, there are many lanes you can take, and each of those lanes in the derech hara is called the darkei choshech, and the right. Now, pasuk yudalit, hasmeichim. These are people, not only do they do bad, but they rejoice in doing bad. Yagilu, they glee, they have glee, b'tapuchos ra, in the inversion of evil. Now again, double. So here we also have a famous comment of the Gra. What is the difference between simcha and gila? Right, it says smechem and yagilu. So, there are different explanations, but this is the explanation of the Gra. The Vilna Gaon says, Simcha is something new that occurs. A Simcha happens, something happens. You have a new child, a new grandchild, a new position, a new bracha. So Simcha is the feeling of newness, renewal. Gila, actually, the Malbim says the opposite. Indeed, you may have heard the opposite. But the Gra says, Gila is that joy of the constants. That's why he says, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Yismachu ha-shamayim v'sagel ha-oretz. Let's take the Oretz first. In the Oretz, Hashem doesn't create new things. Ein kol chadash tachas ha-shemesh. So the joy we have in the world, in the fact that God maintains the world every single day, is the gila. Baruch Hashem, we still have our trees, we have our flowers, we have our life. That's gila. That's not a new thing. That's maintaining the beauty and the goodness of the old. In Shamayim, Hashem still creates new things. There's a pasuk in Eicha, Chadashim labkarim. Every morning Hashem creates something new. That's Yismachu HaShemayim. The Malachim in Shemayim rejoice over newness. And in the Aretz rejoices over the renewal of what Hashem already made, B'sheisha Shemei Bereishis. By the way, again, as a digression, apropos of nothing, I do have to tell you the story. This is it's biographical, it's a Vilna Gaon biography, so I guess peripherally it's relevant. That Chazal actually say there are 10 different terms of Simcha. This is only two of them. There's Gila, Rina, Ditsa, Chedva, right? All of these things are languages of Simcha. So the story goes, there was a maskil, a so-called enlightened person. It was not even from. But he was a student of Diktuk and Tanakh. And he very much wanted to talk to the Vilna Gaon about synonyms and meanings of Tanakh, etc. But he knew the Vilna Gaon would not meet with a person who was not Shomer Mitzvahs. So he disguised himself as an Italian rabbi, because the rabbis in Italy didn't have beards. Whatever the reason was, the minhag of the Italian rabbi was not to have beards. And he even forged letters from based in Rome, etc., establishing his credentials. And he got himself an appointment with the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon must have suspected something, because the Vilna Gaon didn't let him walk into his room. The Vilna Gaon said, "I'll meet you in the hallway. We can talk." And the person had 150 questions, Nach, and Tanakh, to ask the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon said, "So ask your questions." And the person asked question one and waited for an answer, and the Vilna Gaon said, "No, finish your questions." He says, "Well, how many?" He says, "All of them." So the person reads 150 questions to the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon then says, "Question 1 and question 73 are based on the same assumption, and this is the answer. Question 2 and question 94, Imam it was phenomenal. Not only did he remember all of the questions, but he was able to instantly analyze them and compare them and show that they were based on common mistaken assumptions. And so he answered all the questions. So the person was absolutely amazed. As he was about to leave, the Vilna Gaon says, "I want to ask you something." He says, "You're an expert in diktuk." He says, "Chazal say there are 10 terms for simcha. How would you give, what do you think the difference between all these terms are?" So the person gave some explanation. The guy probably didn't like it, but he explained the differences. But he only did 9 of them. So the Vilna Gaon said, "What about ditza? What's the meaning of ditza?" So the person said, "Well, grammarians say ditza is not rejoicing, ditza is dancing. So it's not a lesson of simcha, it's dancing." The Vilna Gaon said, "But Chazal say it's simcha." He says, "I know, but the grammarians say that it's dancing." So the Vilna Gaon just turned around to close the door, and that was the end of the conversation. All right, so the guy is really on a high. He goes back to his hotel, whatever it is. So around 15 minutes later, there's a knock at the door, and there's some burly guys from the basin of Vilna. They're like the policemen. And they say, "Were you the person who was just at the Vilna Gaon's?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "Well, the Vilna Gaon instructed us that you are mavaze divrei chachamim. You humiliated, you denigrated the words of the sages. And under the rules of our kahila, because kahilas had autonomy, you have to be in a public stock, like a stockade, for 45 minutes and wear a sign that I am an apikoros, and people go by and insult you." So he was taken to the stockade in Vilna, and people threw tomatoes at him. He had to wear a sign, "I am an apikoros." And the story ends, this is a letter that he wrote later to his friend, and the story says, he says, "And then I was tarred and feathered, and I was dumped into the river." He says, "I never had such humiliation in my life," he said. But then at the end he said, "But you know, to meet the Vilna Gaon, I would do it again." he said it was worth it. So anyway, I'm just bringing it in because here we only have the explanation of 2 of the terms of Simcha. In point of fact, there are 10 terms. Now, how does that work? So the Vilna Gaon says the following. The first part of the pasuk is talking about a guy who does bad things. He's not a mirma person. He just does bad things. So every single day he does a new bad thing. He has simcha. Baruch Hashem, today I did that thing. Tomorrow I'll do this thing. That's simechem. He has simcha. But the second part of the pasuk is a baal mirma. Now by a baal mirma, a baal mirma was already planning the evil beforehand. In other words, when he spoke to you about good, he was thinking about the evil. So when the evil actually occurs, it's not a new thing. He didn't wake up with an impulse to do something bad. He's carrying out his pre-existing strategy. When you carry out your pre-existing strategy, that falls under the realm of gila rather than simcha. You see, so asmechem lasos ra is... in other words, the guy with low impulse control, just every day is a new thing. Every day he just gets up and does something bad. That's the simcha of Ra. But the one who is a conspiracy person, he plans things, he tricks people, then when the Ra actually happens, it is confirming what he already wanted to do. His feeling is that of gila and the like. Okay. Now, if you look at the next verse, I'm sorry, I'm going to skip a verse. Look at Tes Zayin. So this is the Kasani unit, which is divided into Ra and Mirma. We then go into the Tavani unit, which is divided to Ta'ava, which is physical pleasure, and Chemda, which is psychological pleasure of acquisition. Now here, the imagery switches to the woman of temptation. Meaning, the Kasani Yetzirah is simply described as a bunch of bad guys, male actually, who are trying to get you to join their gang. Just bad kids. This, because it's Tavani, specifically introduces the modality of adultery, being tempted by foreign women that try to take a person away from his sense of duty. Now, without the Vilna Gaon, we would simply assume we're talking about just one woman personifying this Yetzer Hara, but he splits it into two, because you'll notice there is called an Isha Zara. An Isha Zara means a strange woman or a foreign woman. And then there's Nochriya. Now again, in the normal English, this would just be a synonym. It's talking about the same person or the same metaphor. But the Vilna Gaon says no. He says Tavani, Tava is called Zara. I'm sorry. Chemda is called Zara. I'll explain why. And Tava is called Nochriya. Now, why is this so? So again, the Vilna Gaon is a bit strict, and again, stricter than the way most of us are able to live our lives. But the Vilna Gaon says, if you look at Tava and Chemda, so again, Tava is physical, sensual pleasure. And Chemda is acquisitiveness, getting possessions, increasing wealth. The Vilna Gaon says, although Tava is necessary, we have to eat, we have to procreate, but he says, physical Tava is considered to be Nochriya. It is not considered Jewish at all. That's what he says. Nochriya means a non-Jew. It's not your nation at all. The Vilna Gaon's own sheet, and not everybody would agree with him on this. Particularly the Hasidic movement would not agree with him. And this is actually one of the nekudot of machlokes between the Gra and Hasidus. But the Vilna Gaon took the position that a person must try, and again, I'm not saying this is our madrega, but he says a person must try to be marchik himself or herself from physical pleasure to the greatest degree possible, because the physical pleasure will destroy a person's spiritual sensibility. Now this is a topic that deserves much more treatment than we can give it right now. On one hand, it is very true that Chazal have many statements about parishas, separating even from that which is permitted. There is even a medrash that says, before you should pray that Torah should enter your mouth, you should pray that fancy food should not enter your mouth. There is actually a medrash. That is one side of the coin. There is another side of the coin. That's why this is much more complicated. The nazir. Right? A nazir is a person who took a vow not to drink wine, and not to cut his hair, not to come in contact with the dead. And at the end of the Nazirus, the Nazir must bring a sacrifice because he sinned. And the Gemara in Maseches Nazir asks, what sin did a Nazir commit? What was his sin? Rashi brings, it's really from the Gemara, Rashi brings, because he deprived himself of a legitimate pleasure that God said we should enjoy. And he who deprives himself of legitimate pleasures that Hashem said we should enjoy is, as it were, expressing a lack of gratitude to God for God's kindness. There's a Talmud Yerushalmi that says that after 120 years, we will be called to account for every pleasure of this world that we could have enjoyed that we did not enjoy. Rav Hirsch used to give an example, because he lived near the Alps in Germany, that Hashem is going to ask every one of us, did you look at the Alps that I put there for your enjoyment and for your pleasure? Well, at least I can say I saw them from the airplane and the like. So this is a complicated area, meaning, you know, I want to mask differences here. No, I mean, the answer is there are different shitas here, meaning the Vilna Gaon's own shita was that one should be marchik themselves very much from physical pleasures. That even when you do the mitzvahs of eating and everything else, you just do so just for the mitzvah. You don't, you try to minimize your pleasure. Chassidus in particular stressed the idea that in your pleasure, l'shem shamayim, you're sanctifying and elevating God. There are different approaches here. But all I can say is that the Vilna Gaon is certainly, he doesn't need me to say so, but even if one would say, oh, this is a philosophy that's too strict for me, I can't live that way. But you still have to take the core of truth that's there. And there is a core of truth. The core of truth is that the more we are involved in the physical, the less sensitive our hearts are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's really the idea. So one has to be like everything else. I mean, the Rambam would say, what would the Rambam say? The Rambam would say, everything in moderation. One should enjoy the world. One should appreciate the world. One should be sensitive to beauty. But one has to always connect it back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Vilna Gaon here is going fairly strong, fairly stark. And he calls Tava Nochriya. It's like marrying a non-Jewish woman. Nochriya. It has nothing to do with Judaism. As opposed to Chemda, he says. Chemda is the desire to acquire wealth. Here, he says, Chemda does have a role. Because Chemda is the mechanism by which I can support Torah. And I can support my family. The only thing with chemda is you have to be sure that your chemda doesn't take away somebody else. Now, in Isha Zara is the following. The difference between Nachriya and Isha Zara is a Nachriya is a non-Jewish woman. An Isha Zara is a Jewish woman that you can't marry because she's married to somebody else. So with respect to Tava, we say, keep away from it. It's like Nachriya. With respect to chemda, it's okay for you, but don't take somebody else's wife. Don't infringe on somebody by dishonest behavior. That's why there's a diuk between nachriya and isha zara. Isha zara just means a foreign woman, means a wife that is married to somebody else you cannot touch. Now the emes is, I see that the mefarshim themselves ask a kasha on the Vilna Gaon. They really don't understand this difference because Mimanavshach. If you're doing it l'shem Hashem, l'shem Shemaim, then even taiva is good. If I'm eating and drinking and enjoying to be grateful to God, then even taiva is good. And if I'm earning money for my own self-aggrandizement, then even chemda is no good. So this idea, taiva always bad and chemda good, it's hard to fully understand this because it seems that the right motive will make both good, and the bad motive will make them both bad. And yet the Gra is really telling me that it is chemda that is the lesser of the two evils, so to speak. Now he even makes the point, and he brings a beautiful diuk, because you'll notice, Pasuk 16 says, yeah, I'm just, one. This is the last Pasuk, to save you from a foreign woman, that is chemda, from the Nachriya, whose words are so slippery, smooth-tongued. And that's Tava. So he points out, the smooth-tongued woman is only the Nachriya, not the Isha Zara. Why is that? Because Taiva, which is hedonism and pleasure, is basically a lazy type of attitude. Stay at home, relax, enjoy, watch television, don't go, you know, don't bother getting up. Chemda, on the other hand, could be quite rough. Get up, make that deal, travel. So the concept of smooth talking doesn't really work for chemda. because Chemda calls upon me to be very, very hardworking in doing things. So the Yetzer Hara there is for power, for acquisition. It's not for laziness and ease. Right? The lazy argument is only the Tava argument. It is not the Chemda argument. Now that might be, in fact, why maybe the Vilna Gaon considers Chemda not as bad as Taiva. Because I think the concept is this, that since Chemda requires initiative, creativity, and discipline, these are qualities, even if they're misdirected into the business world or professional success, but these are qualities you can then bring into the Torah learning and Avodas Hashem, because they are positive qualities, albeit misdirected. As opposed to the laziness and the decadence of Taiva, the Vilna Gaon feels they're kind of irredeemable. Because once you get into the mindset of laziness and instant gratification, you're not going to be able to put yourself in the disciplined framework of serving Hashem. That might be part of why Chemda is a bit more redeemable. Because Chemda takes work and initiative, and the Taiva is just the laziness of having things come to you. Yeah.
What do Chazal call a woman Jewish and unmarried, Chemda or Taiva?
Well, it would be closer to Chemda for sure.
How do they describe such a woman? That's not Nafriyad, it's not Sarah.
It would be a Penuya, it's called. Penuya means an available woman. Penuya. Penuya.
Yeah. And yeah. That would be more of a Taiva than a Chemda?
No, it would be more of a the actual relationship would be Taiva, but the metaphor would be Chemda, because it's not foreign to you, because you could actually marry her if you wanted to. Okay, so these are things to think of. Now again, as I point out, we will encounter, and I'm not sure how to do with this all the time, we will encounter certain themes in the Vilna Gaon that are very, very tough. They represent the highest madrigos that he talked about. And they may not always be according to our madrega, but as I say, even in a situation like that, we have to extract what the relevance of it is to us. And there is a relevance that a person should not be overly invested in the physical and material world. And listen, I'll give you a very simple example. This idea that once you're habituated to instant gratification, spiritual pleasures are much more difficult to perceive. You know, this is even true in the learning sense. You know, for many, many years now, for 20 years, most colleges have required that students come with a laptop with an internet capability, because they need to be connected to the internet. Do you know there's actually a movement among universities, it's still a small movement, to ban laptops, because they claim that web surfing has destroyed the ability of people to concentrate. They are so used to jumping from thing. Now, this is totally different. I'm not talking about pornography, and I'm not talking about solitaire. I'm talking about people who use the internet for education. They use it in a totally good way. And even so, it rewires one's ability to engage in deep and systematic thought. In the modern Orthodox world in the United States, in the yeshiva high schools, this is a major problem. They cannot teach kids Gemara anymore because of this. Now, you know, remember from your college days that a standard college class was 50 minutes. And that's because that's the most amount of time that people can concentrate. Although I'm a little meaner than that. If you look now on the YouTube or whatever it is where they give college classes online, it's now around 20 to 30 minutes. And they said this is the maximum concentration chunk. So the point is, when you get habituated to the instant, it's much more difficult. So that's absolutely a true statement. Anyway, you'd be